Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
So I think for the first time, I understand why Renaissance festivals exist outside of Comic Cons.
They're awesome.
Because aren't they? Okay, so that is like the Comic Con of fantasy worlds, right? Kind of? Because everybody's a pixie
yes.
or an
Are you
elf
a Ren Faire
or...
person, Will?
I love a good Ren Faire.
Everyone's got their thing, fanatics.
Everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Fanatics, the podcast where we talk about things you love, things we love, things that everybody loves
yes.
in a world full of love. I, of course, I'm Claire Kramer, along with my co-host,
David Magadoff. Hello, everybody. Hi, Claire.
Hi, David.
Wow, we have a good one today. I think we're starting to string along in my, I'm sort of manifesting this. The entire cast of Boy Meets World will be on Fanatics is my manifesting. Because we got Daniel Fischel Karp, who is the wonderful Topanga. That happened.
Yes.
You all
who's
listened to
who's
that
fanatical
episode.
About vintage t-shirts.
Yes.
And that's where we learned about the mullet and the
pit to pit.
The pit to pit and all the crazy stuff that you can terminology with vintage t-shirts.
Yes, listen to that episode. But today we have on Mr. Will Friedle. Yes. Big brother Eric Matthews. And so we have more of my childhood on this podcast, and I could not be happier.
Did you affiliate more with the Eric Matthews character or the Savage character?
Ben Savage all the way. Well, not only
really?
Do we look alike, oh yeah. I think that's a great compliment, Claire, that you even think I would relate to Eric Matthews, who the handsome, charming, good at football, classic, hair parted down the middle and just sort of just effortlessly going down his head and looking handsome. No, I'm the somehow, I don't know how they were related, but much more Jewy younger brother of Eric Matthews. But he's going to come on here and talk to us about his love of fantasy novels. But let's keep talking about our love of Will Friedle for a second.
Well, I will talk about my love of his, now that you mentioned it, he did have the classic like 80s hair, like, or 90, when was that sitcom on? 90s, I guess. It was like that like awesome hair that Zach from Saved by the Bell had
yes.
also, you know, and those other, you know, I'm sure someone on 90210 had it. I can't think of whom off the top of my head.
Brian Austin
not Luke
Green.
Perry, not, oh yeah, Brian Austin Green. Yeah. And he did okay for himself with Megan yeah. Fox there for a while. And, you know, back together, apart, together, who knows, but.
Will Friedle also, so many voices in Batman and Deadpool and ElfQuest and Kim Possible and Guardians of the Galaxy TV series. The dude just is, his voice
He's
is everywhere.
He's super talented. I actually also did ElfQuest with him. We recorded like 2 weeks ago and we had this great recording session where like nine of us all phoned in from across the country and recorded, you know, three episodes. And it was so much fun, but I was in awe of his talent. Again, so talented as a voice actor.
Oh, that's so fun. Did he do like his natural voice, Claire? Or
no.
was he doing like a fun voice?
No, he was doing like crazy different voices for the different. And actually, his character wasn't too heavy in these episodes that we were recording. And so the director was like, could you please also read this character? And could you? And then he like on the spot busted out with like the most amazing interpretation of these other elves that I'm like, they would be crazy if they didn't just hire him and use this recording for that, because he was awesome.
Well, it's a good thing that he loves fantasy novels, because his inner elf came out. So everyone enjoy Will Friedle and diving deep into fantasy novels.
Woohoo. Welcome, Will Friedle, to the podcast. We're so happy to have you here today. And we are going to talk to you about something that we haven't talked to anybody but about this. We're going to talk about fantasy novels.
Yes.
I love it. I mean, okay, let's just start with the basics. Will, what is a fantasy novel?
Well, I mean, it's funny that you should ask that, because there are a number of different genres when it comes to fantasy. I mean, everything from, some people will say it's sci-fi, but no, sci-fi and fantasy are two completely different things. So what makes a fantasy novel, I would say, would be great world building and a wonderful magical system. And so those two things coupled together is usually what makes a wonderful fantasy novel.
And how would you, hold on, you brought up a great thing that I think a lot of people are, as you say it, just like me, are like, that's a great point. What is the difference, Will, finally, for all of us between sci-fi and fantasy?
Okay, so, well, it would depend, and you're going to get a lot of people that are going to agree and disagree with every aspect of what I'm going to say, because it depends. Sci-fi novels normally have, as the title would say, some element of science fiction involved.
Right.
Whereas fantasy, or high fantasy, if you want to get even more specific, is usually more magically related than it is somehow technologically related. So there can be elements of both that will overlap. But if you're reading about something taking place on a giant spaceship, chances are you are reading a sci-fi novel, as opposed to you are reading about orcs and elves, you are then reading a fantasy novel, which, again, it gets into a gray area, much like the white shirt with black stripes, do I use bleach or not, where it's, you know, it's orcs and elves on a spaceship. Okay, am I reading a fantasy novel or am I reading a sci-fi novel? So, yeah, there's some fisticuffs over the exact meaning and definition of what one or both would be.
And I think that everybody kind of has a different definition. I mean, like you said, some people will disagree with what you're saying. It seems to be like a really hot topic, especially in the fantasy community, because they want to remain separated in title and category. Is that right? Would you say?
It is. And the thing that's so amazing is that fantasy itself can include so much. People go back to, and you want to talk about the genesis of fantasy, a lot of people will go to Tolkien and Lord of the Rings. When I truly believe, and a lot of people agree with me, that the actual genesis of fantasy is more epic poetry, like Homer and the Odyssey, Beowulf, things like that. That's really where the fantasy world kind of started. The Odyssey is the perfect fantasy novel.
So the never-ending story.
You
mentioned the Odyssey and Beowulf. Are they not side by side with the never-ending story?
With the never-ending story. Part two? I would say part two is in a category all by itself, much like break into. But yes, there is that question of where did it start? And everybody says that, you know, the genesis is really Tolkien, which, again, I don't agree with. I think it's far, far earlier than that.
Yeah, that's a good point about Beowulf and the Odyssey. I see where you're going with this, but where did you first like discover the fantasy genre, I guess?
Where was your genesis, Will?
So that's the thing. My initial genesis might not even really be considered a fantasy novel, but it so got me into reading that it brought me into the fantasy world. It was third grade, so it was 19. And I found a book by an author named Lynn Reed Banks called The Indian in the Cupboard.
I love that book.
It was unbelievable, and it opened my eyes to a world I'd never thought imaginable that existed between two covers, where you can open up this world and disappear into your mind and into a world that's been created by these authors. And The Indian in the Cupboard absolutely changed my life. So for those of you who don't know, it is a book. And again, fantasy-esque, but not probably considered fantasy. It would actually nowadays be considered probably a YA or a young fantasy book, even though it's more, there is a magical system, but it doesn't really necessarily take place in a magical world. A boy finds a magical cupboard that every time he locks it, whatever toy he locks inside comes to life. And he put this little Native American figure inside, which he locked and it opened up, and then a little cowboy figure, and it's about their struggle against each other and these tiny little people in this big world. It's amazing. And it just opens up your mind. And that then led me to the fantasy world, which again changed my entire life. So
why do you think that movie, though, looking back on it, like when you think about it?
Well, not movie, the book, not the movie.
Oh,
the
sorry, because I know it is the movie. I apologize, because I'm literally picturing the trailer of it. All I know. But when you were reading the book, did you just go like, wow, I can't believe that these people came to life? Because
yes, you know what it was? It was the first time I can recall losing myself in words to the point where I could see everything happening. Mm-hmm. In my mind, crystal clear. I could picture the kids. I could picture the little figures. I could picture the room they were in. It was so beautifully written and so detailed that it made me understand that while television, which is arguably the greatest love of my life, the way that the story is told to you and laid right out in front of you, you're part of the story, because how I picture the character in my head is going to be different than how you picture the character in your head. So everybody sees the story or reads the story differently or adapts to the story differently. And that was the first time in my life where it opened my mind to that. And then I'd say about fifth or sixth grade, I'd become as much of a voracious reader as you can be at that age, when you're then finding kind of all the different books that are around there. And the fantasy world was calling at that point. And that's when I jumped right to what is still my favorite fantasy series of all time. By David Eddings, but really when you get more deeply into it, you realize he wrote most of them with his wife. And then later the books had both their names as David Lee Eddings, which is called the Belgariad and the Malorian series, which the first one is Pawn of Prophecy. And literally it was, you couldn't have written it better. My bedroom growing up used to be my older brother's bedroom. And when he moved into a bigger room, I moved into his room, and he didn't take most of his books with him. So I'm looking at the books on the shelf, and there's this book, Pawn of Prophecy, that was just left there. And I opened it, and again, just like, it was the most wonderful world to lose yourself in. And that's the joy of fantasy, is a lot of the times what you're doing is you're opening book one of 15. So you're with these characters for a long amount of time, a ridiculous amount of time. The Wheel of Time, which is one of the biggest fantasy series of all time, from the time that he started writing it to the time it finished, the original author had died. It had been 20 some odd years, and his wife had to go out and find another author to finish the series because the series took so long. So you're investing decades in these characters that you're reading, and it changes the whole ballgame when you're not just, oh, it's one book and I'm tossing it. No, it's book one of 14, and you know that you're in the long haul. It's pretty great.
It sounds like you really have to be, and I'm this way when I read too. I'm a completionist. Like if I like an author, I have to read everything the author has written. It doesn't matter. You know, that's just part of like what I crave. So I understand the longevity in these series and the investments, I guess.
It's phenomenal. I take that to an even more extreme version where I'm what I am now coining a masochistic completionist.
Okay.
Because I will open a book and I will hate the first chapter and I will still have to read the other 15 books. So it's like,
you're a hate reader.
I am. It's like, this is the worst. And I'll throw it down. I'll go, now I have to buy the next one. I hate it. And I will still have to finish every single book.
But there's something about knowing that full story, you know? And also, I have to pick your brain on this, okay? Because with TV and film, you also have that suspension of disbelief, you know, arguably. But it is different when you're reading. How is that different for you, Will, when you open a fantasy book, you know?
You know, it's a good question. I guess because I'm a writer, but I don't write prose. So I'm a screenwriter, have been since I was a kid. And something that I love, and it's a great job and it's a lot of fun, but I don't sit there and write 1,000-page novels. So to be able to lose yourself in a world that somebody's built from, you know, the blank page is a wonderful and horribly daunting thing to stare at. So to know that somebody has taken that and built a world, perfect example, going back to Pawn of Prophecy and the Belgariad and the Malorian series, they finished the entire series. It's 10 books long. And then they wrote something called the Riven Codex. And what the Riven Codex is essentially all the details about how David and Lee Eddings built the world, down to the point where he created for every individual land in the world he built, he created their own economic system with their own system of money.
Wow.
So in the Riven Codex, you're literally reading how a Tolnedrin crown cost, what that is worth next to a Cherrick gold. And you're going, you know, this is insane. Not only are you creating these entire races out of whole cloth, but then you're coming up with political systems for each individual land. You're coming up with economic systems for each judiciary systems. I mean, there's different forms of government that he's talking about. And you're reading the book about how he created the world and how detailed it is. And all this from the story being when he was with his editor at lunch one day, he drew a map on a napkin and handed it to him. And that became the start of the world. So from there to extrapolate to the point of full economic systems, you're realizing how much work goes into creating these phenomenal worlds, which is what they are. You're losing yourself in a completely built world.
It's okay.
It's crazy.
It's totally crazy. So now let me ask you this. Christopher Nolan, obviously I'm reminded of when his diagram of Inception came out.
Yeah.
And the fantasy, it sounds like it's very linear, and Nolan's Inception was very horizontal. You know, it went deep, 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 deep. Is that fantasy then? Or is that...
Science fiction. Yes. Well, that would be, his world was more what I would call confusing. It was genius, but I loved watching that movie with people who were like, no, man, you're just confused because you don't get it. It's like, no, I get it. It's just confusing. This is where you get into the question of what is sci-fi and what is fantasy. I mean, there are elements of both, obviously, in the world that he built. It's all world building, which is kind of the overall arcing theme of sci-fi and fantasy. But yeah, it's both and it's neither. That's the joy of it. And it's kind of what you can make from it, but it's also different with film than it is with books. Yeah. Like, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan. I tried to get into it, and you figure you're going to love one, you're going to jump into the other. And it's just kind of not the case for me, where I've tried, and there are some that are incredible.
Right.
And some authors that do both, which is why I thought, oh my God, well, I love his or her fantasy work, so obviously I'm going to love his or her sci-fi work. And it's not always the case. So it's certainly interesting.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Well, it goes to the idea that essentially what you're saying, if I could, dare I say, boil it down into a sentence, this is a big dare.
This is a big dare.
Is what fantasy is about, and science is what science fiction is about. If I could. I know. It's not that simple. How do I create world peace in a sentence? I can't. But
right.
I feel that's essentially what it is. So what do you think you love? You keep saying you want to dive into these amazing worlds where there's different languages and currencies and political systems, and they go on for 14 books. I have a great belief that usually the things that we see as a kid stick with us forever. Like, you're still stuck with this, but you learned this as a kid. You didn't learn this as a 30-year-old man. So was there something you loved about getting away? Was there your life in such a way? I had a good childhood. I loved just diving in to these fun, creative worlds. Or was there something else going on that, dare I can ask you if you can go back into your childhood a little?
No, that's fine. My family life is Brady Bunch-esque, where I had a phenomenal family and did growing up. So no, I had a wonderful childhood. My life, my entire life, and Claire knows this because when you're a young actor, my entire life was a fantasy. I mean, I've been on television since I was 11 years old. I started on stage at 10. By 11 and a half, I was getting on the bus in Connecticut and driving down to New York City by myself in the 80s to go for auditions. I mean, everything about my life was a fantasy anyway. So it was, I think maybe it lends itself to that. It's so strange because it is such an escapist kind of pastime. And yet I really didn't have anything to escape from. I just loved it. The same way with television. I mean, television has spoken to me since I was a tiny little kid in a way that it doesn't speak to most people. I mean, at 5 or 6 years old, I would watch a television show and I remember pointing to one of the characters and looking at my parents and saying that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I knew it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. I knew that it was what I had to do. There was no question. I was named after a television character. My first full sentence was about a television show. It has been part of my life. It is my life. And that's kind of what fantasy felt like to me the first time I read it. It takes you to such a place and now you're directing that's not even right. The writer's directing it. You're the director of photography in your own mind, where you get to show the colors of the world and
you're the
architect.
You're building. Yes.
Going back to Inception.
Wonderful.
I like it, Claire. Good job.
You are back to Inception. And the twist at the end is it was really confusing. Yeah.
What did the totem mean?
Exactly. But no, it's just you get into these worlds and some of them are horrifyingly overwritten and they are 1,000 pages long and could have been 500 pages long. And you realize that when you're on page 7 of describing a dress that a woman's wearing, that you're kind of going, okay, this I don't need. And then you have some like The Wheel of Time that were supposed to be 6 books long, but were so popular that the company came to him halfway through and came to Robert Jordan halfway through and said, can you double it? So some of the books in the middle there meander where you're kind of like, oh, okay, this is not, this is filler. But you're still in, you're in the world. And some of these authors like Brandon Sanderson is a perfect example. Brandon Sanderson is my go-to right now, my favorite author right now. And it's because the magical systems that he comes up with, you go, wow, what? Like, where did you, for instance, one of his first trilogies ever is called the Mistborn series. And it's absolutely wonderful. And it starts in kind of Victorian era. And it's about the magical system is all based on internally burning metal. Ooh. So you can walk around with a vial of pewter, and if you down it, you can then burn it inside yourself, and that will give you one specific power. But the very select few people are what's called Mistborn, where they can burn all 11 metals at the same time, which allows them flight and power, and they can riot mobs to do certain things they want. And you're sitting there reading these things going, how? Where did you come up with this? And then he'll take those powers, and he'll put it in a Wild West world, where all of a sudden it is now a law enforcement, sheriff. Yeah,
it's if
Wyatt Earp could down metals and burn metal. It's insane. And you go, where are you coming up with this kind of stuff? And it's that whole world building what if that sucks you in.
Okay.
And it's crazy pants.
You must, Will, have started to build your own world out to write a novel of your own. You must. I mean, you're so deep into this. You have to have
a
template. Yeah. So tell us, what is Will's what is your fantasy novel?
A little bit. Okay. So the very little bit of my novel is essentially, I've never told anybody this.
Okay.
Essentially, you find out that all of time on every planet in every universe is run by one royal family.
Okay.
And that every royal in the family has a right hand that's called a runner. It's a time runner. And if they see something on a planet they don't like, they send their runner back to change it so that the planet ends up where they want it. And the problem is now become that the prince and princess have usurped the throne and killed the king and queen, and they're going to destroy time on most of the planets. But two of the runners have escaped.
Oh.
So again, it's very, and I'm not a prose writer. So this is a story that is wonderful in my mind, but it's for me. I've got 4 horribly written chapters of a terrible book that no one will ever see.
That's not true.
It is. Trust me, it is.
You could bring someone in. I love the concept. It's genius.
Maybe. And it's really funny because I have some of the coolest moments in my life have been becoming friends with these fantasy authors. So Brandon Sanderson, for instance, who I was talking about, is one of the biggest fantasy authors in the world right now. I, out of nowhere, just wrote him a letter and said, hi, I'm a voiceover actor. I'm an actor. I write for most of the animated series that I've done, and would you ever consider making one of your novels into an animated series? And 2 days later, he wrote back and said, my family and I are huge fans of yours. We've loved some of the series you've done. You were Bumblebee. My kids love Bumblebee. That's amazing. I am sending you a copy of an unpublished manuscript, and I would love for you to read it and let me know what you think. So it has since come out, but I'm looking at an unpublished manuscript from my favorite author in the world, knowing that nobody has read this thing. And it was just the coolest thing in the world. And Robin Hobb, who is another amazing fantasy author, she's incredible. She wrote The Assassin's Apprentice and The Live Ship Traders and tons of novels. She and I have become friends and we're working on a project together for a while. So to kind of put myself in that world with the people that I love and respect is just incredible.
That's the thing. Your love of television and your love of fantasy, you're the bridge, man. You're the rainbow bridge.
I hope so, because it's one of those things where, I mean, nothing lends itself to fantasy like animation. So it would just, I mean, really work like gangbusters. So we've got some stuff happening, which is pretty neat. But it's, yeah, when you lose yourself in these worlds, it's you live the worlds for as long as you're in the books. I mean, you look at the Harry Potter series. I mean, there were kids, you talk about people say magic don't exist. There were kids waiting in line at midnight to buy a book.
Oh,
that's magic.
And you know what I was just reminded of with you getting the manuscript before it was published? J.K. Rowling's didn't even do that for the casts.
I know.
They were like, we had to go buy the book when it came out just like everyone else. So that is like so special.
Insane. Apparently she, one day, the kid who played Harry, I'm blanking on his name,
Daniel Radcliffe.
Apparently went up to her one day and said, how does it end? Before, as they were shooting the movie, and she wouldn't answer, but turned back around and said, I guess as the story said, don't worry, you do get a death scene. So she gave him that little bit, that little tidbit before they finished. But I mean, yeah, that's a perfect example of a world that can change the world because everybody was jumping into it, kids, adults, and that's, you know, one series out there of 50 that are like that. So yeah,
is there a conception amongst like the hardcore fantasy novel readers that like something like Harry Potter, because it was so commercialized, is not as good, or, you know, is it looked down upon at all?
I don't think so. I mean, again, you're always going to get the haters are going to hate kind of things. The people that no matter what it is, if it becomes popular, a band, anything, it's like, then it's no longer cool. Right. I've never been that person. I'm that person. If something's good, it's good.
It's good.
And if, you know, more people, I remember my brother finding this band in the 80s that he loved and loved and loved, and then it became super popular. And it was like, it was Guns N' Roses. So he found Guns N' Roses before anybody else. And then he's like, now they're on MTV. It's like, really? They're popular. That's not a bad thing.
Everybody's enjoying their music.
Exactly. People can do that. So I think you get some diehard Harry Potter fans where that's their whole life is Harry Potter. And then they will never jump into any other fantasy. And then you get fantasy fans that just, you know, they like Harry Potter. They like Game of Thrones, which I'm not a huge Game of Thrones fan. And you know, you have those conversations. You have Tolkien conversations where, man, if you want to see nerds rage, you stand up in a fantasy conference and you say, I don't like Lord of the Rings. And I'm that guy who says, I don't like Lord of the Rings. And oh, man.
And what happens?
Well, half of them go to grab their broadsword.
Will. Jeez.
Exactly. You know what actually happens? No joke. Is the whole room goes, oh, how can you say that?
Yeah.
That's the most. How can you possibly say that? And then half of them come up to you out of earshot and go, I don't really like it either.
You give voice to the voiceless.
It's true. And again, I love Lord of the Rings for what it was and what it did for the fantasy genre. I always equate Lord of the Rings to the Model T Ford.
Okay.
Amazing, amazing for what it did for the automotive industry. Better cars now. So that's kind of how I look at Lord of the Rings. By the ninth Hobbit song of them just walking through the woods singing, I want to throw the book through the damn window.
Right.
But it is what it is and people love it. But I'm also not a big Game of Thrones fan, and that throws people too.
Well, you know, the series, the produced series on HBO was a lot different than the books, a lot. And the books talk about meandering in the middle. Like Brienne was like walking around in like the sixth book for like half the pages. It's really interesting. Are you with TV? There's this whole thing about like rewatching a series, or, you know, we all watch movies again and again, but I think it's really different with books. Are you a rereader? Do you reread series?
I am always rereading and rereading series. I am right now, I am halfway through the Sword of Truth series right now, for it's got to be my 10th time. And I'm like that with David's eyes, just like, you are crazy, man. Yeah. I reread and reread and reread over and over and over again. I'll find a new series and I'll read the entire series and then I'll put it on the shelf and I'll start over with something else. And it's also, if I hear that a new book in the series is coming out, I have to start at book one and read all the way through to then get to the new one.
You are some sort of new completionist.
It
has to be like a different title. I don't like the negativity of like a masochistic completionist, but we got to coin this term because that isn't, I'm a completionist.
Claire,
as
my
well.
My tribe calls him a mensch.
That's right. How about nouveau completionist?
That's good. I like.
There we go. Yeah. So that's how I am. I'm that way. And it's, I've gotten to the point now with some of the series where I've read them so many times that it's more skimming than reading, but there's some that I want to read over and over again. And then there's some that are, for lack of a better word, just therapeutic. I'm having a bad day, a bad week. I'm anxious. I know I can throw myself into one of these fantasy worlds and relax myself.
Yeah. Yeah. How many hours a day do you read? maybe it's easier to say like a month. Like how many books would you go through in a month?
Oh, that's tough to say. It depends on the month. I like to read, I would say 50 to 100 pages of a book a day.
Okay.
Pretty good.
So yeah, it's not ridiculous. It's not like I'm reading novel after novel after novel every single day, but I like, it relaxes me to read, which, you know, in a fantasy novel, 50 to 100 pages is, you know,
two chapters,
three, four, five chapters. Yeah. In a Dan Brown book, it's 177 chapters. But so 50 to 100 pages is kind of my go-to of that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Is there a certain series that you've loved that, or is it the ones that you've just reached out to these people that you'd love to see turn into a show?
I don't want to see any of them turned into a show.
Oh,
I am that person. I wouldn't mind an animated series here or there, but the kind of like the big Wheel of Time show is coming out. Can't be done well. It's literally impossible. So, we saw that with Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, they had to change everything and then they just wrapped it up and they threw away the last season. It doesn't do the story justice. So Wheel of Time is a perfect example. It's 16,000 page books, basically. So if they want to do either a show that lasts for 48 seasons, or they want to do like 25 3-hour movies, right, then they can do it. But the only thing you can get is a bad version of Wheel of Time. It's too detailed. There's too much going on. Stuff like Harry Potter lent itself to movies. You could do it. You could get away with it. They still cut out a ton that the people that loved the books were like, why would you cut that out? So even that couldn't have been done the way you want it to be done. These never-ending series of books, how do you make a 1200 page book into, a movie? You can't do it. So I'm one of those people where I think stuff should be made for TV and movies. Make fantasy for TV and movies. Build a world specifically for that. Mm-hmm. Don't take these things that are, 16,000 pages long and boil them down to a 3-hour film. Like, it shouldn't be done.
I find that when I'm watching, I like to read the book before the movie comes out. If, for example, I hear they're making a movie out of whatever Dan Brown book. I mean, I've read all his stuff, but you know what I mean? I like to read the book first. And then I get so frustrated because I feel like I have to explain everything to whomever I'm watching the movie with because so much is cut out. So I'm kind of with you on that, Will. I never thought about it that way, but I kind of agree.
And I think, you know what I think would be great is get these amazing women and men that are these fantasy authors and have them write a television show, have them write a movie, do it specifically for that. But don't try to adapt because it's just, it works with some things. It doesn't work with others. And it's Dan Brown's a perfect example. Dan Brown's great. You can totally, but I remember going, my wife and I went and saw the first Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, but if you haven't seen it already, there's nothing you can do.
Oh,
and
blow through it. It's up. It's
exactly.
People should have seen it by now. Go ahead.
That's how I say it too. So when Rue is killed, the little girl is killed.
Yes.
We're sitting in a theater and there's no sound made except for the three women next to us who go, and you saw everyone in the theater kind of look at them like, haven't you read the book already? Is this really your first foray into this world? You're shocked that the games made to kill kids just killed a kid? Like, I don't understand what's happening. So I'm the same way. I like to read the books. The problem is then you're just setting yourself up for disappointment when you go see whatever you're going to see.
No, it's true.
And you get season, or you get television writers who think they can do it as well as the author, and then you get season 8 of Game of Thrones, where you go, oh, it's interesting. You took all the relationships and went, we're going to pretend those didn't happen.
Right.
That's fun.
It's all wiped clean.
Exactly.
Will, if you could lend your voice, since you do so much wonderful voiceover, if you could lend your voice to the character that you've always wished you could, and you get that opportunity, which voice do you, and you get to choose.
Oh, wow. Oh, man, there's so many that I would love to do. I think I would...
off the top of your head. Doesn't have to be... favorite, because it's okay. Just the top favorite. One of the top five.
Well, I mean, again, Randall Thor would be very cool, who's the lead, the main protagonist in... there's three main protagonists in Wheel of Time, the three main guys, who are Perrin, Matt, and Rand. So any one of those three guys would be pretty great. Yeah, it would also be pretty cool to play Silk, who's a great character from my Pawn of Prophecy and my Belgarion and Morian series. He's kind of a snarky, rogue, thieving assassin, for lack of a better kind of phrase.
Perfect. Typecasting.
Yeah, perfect. And he would be very, very cool. So yeah, I mean, there's so many that I would love to do, but I would also love to just, you know, I had an idea that I wanted to work with a bunch of fantasy authors about, which was building a world. And that's one of the things that I was working with Robin Hobb about, and still we're kind of toying with the idea, is building a world of fantasy specifically for animation, not taking anything, but building it for animation, kind of arcing it out. So we have seasons 1 and 2 done, and then going to the best fantasy writers working and giving them each an episode. And saying, here, you write this, you write this, you write this, you write this. And then you've built a world with all the best fantasy writers specifically for animation, which I think would be a ton of fun too.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
So I think for the first time I understand why Renaissance festivals exist outside of Comic Cons.
They're awesome.
Because aren't they? Okay, so that is like the Comic Con of fantasy worlds. Right? Kind of? Because everybody's a pixie or an elf.
Are you a Ren Faire person, Will?
I love a good Ren Faire.
Really?
I have not been to one in years. It's the truth. I was supposed to go to one with the Critical Role gang a couple years ago, and I wasn't able to go. I love a good Ren Faire. I can always eat giant turkey legs and drink some mead. But yes, it is. That's more the high fantasy elves. You know, that's more Dragonlance kind of
pixie,
stuff.
Pixie, elves.
Yeah, yeah, elves, that kind of.
And how does the turkey leg tie in?
Well, because, you know, it's like at, where do you go, medieval times. You know, there's always like the giant turkey leg. For some reason, giant pieces of bird meat always represent some sort of fantasy world.
Is that not your fantasy, Claire? Just dreaming of giant turkey legs
roasting
in the oven?
Right? And then mead?
The last time I was at a Renaissance fair was when I was in high school and I like went and sang with like our, you know, show choir there. So it's been years. I think I should look into it, but it just dawned on me during this episode that it's the exploration of that fandom is
sure.
In a way separated. So yeah. I'm super into it now.
Isn't that the great, did you sing Wassail? Did you sing the Wassail song?
I'm sure we did.
Yeah, you got the mead, Wassail, Wassail, all over the town. Yeah, yes. Of course.
Well, if you had to give a gateway fantasy novel to someone who's just like, I haven't read one, someone that had that feeling like you did with The Indian in the Cupboard, like, which novel would you hand that person?
Could I ask for a few more specifics, such as how old is this person?
Sure. You're pitching to the demographic of someone who's maybe a teenager, maybe pubescent, who is looking for hobbies, trying things out, okay. Trying to become their own adult.
Okay, let's get a little more. Okay, I'm going to even get a little more specific. Ooh. On you. Let's say you're 12 to 11, 12 years old.
Great.
I would lead you directly to either the Ranger's Apprentice series by John Flanagan, who's an Australian writer. It's a wonderful series. Rick O'Riordan, I think, O'Riordan, I think his name is, who does the Percy Jackson series. Those kind of things would be great for that age. Getting a little older than you're 15, 16, something like Pawn of Prophecy. If you're looking for more tongue in cheek with a horrible amount of sexism, I could also then throw in something like Piers Anthony and his books in Xanth, which we just went back to. That's one of those books where I read as a kid. The entire world is based on puns. So, you know, the whole thing takes place in the land of Xanth, and you open up most fantasy novels. When you open up the cover, there's a map of the world. And when you open up, the land of Xanth is Florida. So, and it's this, Piers Anthony is the writer. And as a kid, they were the most joyous things in the world. I went on, my friend Ryder Strong has a podcast called Literary Disco, where they, and I'm the fantasy correspondent on Literary Disco. And I brought them to the world of Xanth, which I hadn't done since I was 12. It is the most horrifyingly sexist piece of literature I have, to the point where the character literally ends up at a rape trial where the woman has to defend herself. It's so horrifying that you go back and you read it and you're like, you've got to be kidding me. So it can touch on every kind of aspect over there. It's crazy. That's one to read for just, wow, times were different in the early 80s. And then Pawn of Prophecy, you get to be 15, 16, get into the Pawn of Prophecy. You are more an adult and you want to jump in and you've got some time. I would say if you've got a ton of time, do Wheel of Time. If you don't, there's an amazing series right now that's happening. It's Brandon Sanderson. It is his Stormlight Archive. He's only, I think it's supposed to be 10 books. He's working on the fourth one now. They are ridiculously entertaining. It's the type of thing where you finish a 1200 page book and you go, that can't be the end, and you flip back and you start it over right away. It's incredible. And you know, a lot of his stuff is great. His, like we were talking about, the Mistborn series, that's incredible. Robin Hobb's Assassin Apprentice. There's so many I could recommend.
Oh my gosh. I first of all, I'm definitely, the first thing I'm doing when we're off this is ordering Indian in the Cupboard for my kids, because I totally forgot about that book. It is amazing. I didn't even know they made a movie out of it, but I'm kind of glad I haven't seen it. And definitely I'm going to take your 12-year-old recommendations as well afterwards. This has been so educational for me, Will. I'm like,
yes,
I'm super impressed. And now I'm going to check out Ryder's podcast, because I love him, and I didn't even know he was doing a show. So.
Yeah, Ryder's got a master's or something that took him a damn long time to get in literature. So he's, you know, very educated when it comes to stuff, and they're like, you know, go very in depth with novel after novel after novel. Ryder's a novelist, so he knows what he's doing with this kind of stuff. But the fantasy world, again, you get to that nerddom, and I love it. I mean,
I love it. Okay, so Will, here's your goal for the next time you come on Fanatics, because you're going to be back.
Get homework, Will. Welcome to our podcast.
I love it.
Here's the homework. Take those four chapters. Don't worry about if they're bad or good. Send them to your writer buddy. Send them to one of these guys that you correspond with and say, help me turn this into my first novel, because it is an amazing idea. And I cannot think of a better fit than you writing one of these things. I'm
that
so
would be
into
great.
It.
I appreciate that. They're not good.
It doesn't matter. The concept, I'm telling you, the concept is good. And you know what? If Claire says it, It's true.
That's true.
If Claire, Claire speaks in third person a lot too.
Right?
Claire
that's
approved.
Right.
That's right.
Listen, Will, put some glitter on it. You're good. Just
draw
put
a map.
Some glitter on it.
Put a map in there. You're good.
Yeah, put a map in there.
Some booty dust.
I mean,
and you're good to
yeah,
go.
You're totally good. I, honestly, thank you so much for joining us. I really feel like just super invigorated about reading right now, and I love that
great.
Feeling.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's well. You have a whole brood of kids, don't you?
Yes, many.
And how old is the oldest now?
12. I have 12, 10, 8, and 6. So,
okay, yeah.
I got
fantasy.
Something for everyone.
There's fantasy to cover. And the 12-year-old, actually, doesn't even matter, boy or girl. Those series, the Rangers Apprentice series, they're easy to read. They're a ton of fun. It's a great story. And again, there's like 15 books. So you just keep going and going and going and going.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Will. David and I know I speak for David. We really enjoyed having you. And
yes.
You're awesome. And until next time, do your homework.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
read
Will.
Your fantasy.
Claire, do you think you do anything per day as much as Will Friedle reads fantasy novels per day?
answer to this one word, mom. But other than that, no. I'm inspired. I love reading. I really, truly, I'm more like a Dan Brown, Jason Bourne, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. That's like my jam with reading. But I absolutely love reading. I do not have enough time to read in my life, I feel like. And even when I try to go to bed early so I can get like a chapter in or get, you know, I end up falling asleep. So my reading life right now is basically when I get on a plane, I read a book. So the more I travel, the more I read, the more I'm at home, I'm too tired to read. But I'm like inspired to try to like crack open a book every day now, you know?
Well, that's the best thing about planes is it, even now with all the Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. right? You just are like, it's so much effort to get connected, especially because it always goes in and off and everything. It's a really special place to just be like, no.
Yes.
I'm going to read. I'm here. I'm focused. I'm in a tube. I am in a tube in the sky. I'm here. I'm present. So
yeah.
I applaud you for that because I too am someone who loves to read on the plane.
Yeah. And like the idea.
It'd be nice to read. It'd be nice to read on the ground too.
It would be nice to read on the ground. But the idea of like on a plane, just to finish up what you were saying about Wi-Fi, like to have to pay to then have to work on my, I'm like, no. I'm just checking out for this flight. Like done. I'm on a plane. Sorry. No Wi-Fi. You know? But Will has this like deep love and respect for the fantasy novel. You know, like that's really what it is with him. It's not just the enjoyment and the pleasure of reading. It's the appreciation for the author and the art form itself, you know?
And the world development. So anyway.
The world creation.
It was a beautiful conversation. It was a beautiful time. And he loves the worlds, and we think the world of him. And
before you wrap it up, one more thing. Let me. I just want to ask you, David, because now I'm really interested. Okay. if we'd asked this with Will, we gave him some homework. He's going to work on his chapters. You know, connect with his friend. If you were to write a fantasy novel off the top of your head, what is it? Give me like the elevator pitch. Two sentence elevator pitch.
Wow. I have to give you the pitch. A young boy steps into an elevator and he steps out on another planet. This is Steve on Jupiter.
I think you went into science fiction a little there, and we did discuss the difference of that too. But I will still accept it. It sounds
no.
like a great story. Steve.
But don't you just appreciate that it was a child named Steve?
Steve on Mars. did you say Mars?
Jupiter.
Jupiter.
I said Jupiter.
My memory is so short.
Which is all more impressive because it's a gaseous planet. So I don't even know how he'd step out. He would just sort of fall.
Remember when
into
Pluto
the
was a planet for like a few decades, and then they're like, nah, oops, we made a mistake.
Pluto's throwing out for Pluto.
All those 80s, you know, dioramas have to be thrown away after that decision.
Oh, no.
Anyway, thank you guys. Now you can wrap it up, David. Go ahead.
All right. Well, we poured one out for Pluto. We'll pour one out for all of y'all. We'll see you next Thursday. Thanks, guys.
Okay, bye, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. And yeah, see you next Thursday. And before you guys drop off, just wanted to give you a heads up. Next week, we are going to talk about Moleskine notebooks. And if you think we can't fill the time talking about Moleskine notebooks, you are sorely, sorely wrong. This is one of my favorite episodes. We have the amazing Janina Gavankar on. She, of course, you know from True Blood, Vampire Diaries, Mysteries of Laura, Sleepy Hollow, The Morning Show, The Way Back, and much, much more. Been on the cover of Vogue. She's an amazing musician as well, and was the first female ever on Twitter back in 2006. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Moleskine notebooks, her systematic way of purchasing them and the colorization system. So tune in next Thursday. We'll see you guys then. Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at @wearefanatics.
Yes, that's We Are Fanadicts. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Colin Baker. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.
Boy, that's a lot.
Elf ears and pixie dust.
And maps. So many maps.
Elf ears and pixie dust.
And maps. So many mother flippin' maps. And a pouch of gold somewhere.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.